are ever lucky enough to travel in another country and lucky or well prepared enough to get a good introduction to the culture there before you go, you might hear some things like this. Or not. Can you hear me? I know, it's repetitive for those of you who've heard it.
This is a matter of accessibility for people to be able to hear through the sound system. If you're lucky enough to travel to another country and you're well prepared enough or have the good fortune again to get an introduction to the culture there before you go, you might hear some things like this. So if you are going to Bulgaria, somebody might prepare you by letting you know that in Bulgaria, people signal yes by shaking their heads and no by doing this. You want to know this. In India, by the way, yes may be signaled more like this. If you're going to Ghana, punctual can mean a few hours after the agreed upon time. And a person isn't considered late until at least that long has elapsed. If you go to the Flemish-speaking areas of Belgium, if you arrive 1 minute after the scheduled time, you will be considered late. If you're going to the Middle East and you want to visit one of the many beautiful mosques there, you need to know whatever your gender, wearing clothes that expose your knees is the height of disrespect. Et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is basic preparation for being in another culture. None of it is about the language differences in spoken and written language. Even setting those aside, we have a rock-bottom fact. Cultures differ. And the message of a good preparation for intercultural exchange, whether in your own country or another one, is that your culture is neither better nor worse than theirs. It's just different. They're different. And keeping that mild kind of relativism in mind will help you to have smooth communication and avoid resentments. The man in India who does this is really not saying, fine, fine, if we absolutely must, you twisted my arm, the way that means to my people, something that I had to remind myself of constantly when I was a young person in India. Time is especially prone to moral judgment. Ghanaians are not being lazy or inconsiderate of other people's time, just as you are not being lazy or inconsiderate if you show up at 11:02 to an 11 o'clock Flemish church service in Belgium. By our culture standards, you're doing fine, as long as you're not leading the service. And in either case, in that place, shorts and knee-length skirts are perfectly acceptable. Traveling in unfamiliar cultures is an education in several principles. One, don't assume that everyone is the same. Don't judge differences as moral or character failings. Gesture, clothing, habits, use of space and time, they're like language. They communicate something. But what they communicate is as different from one place to another as what a sound, like ki, communicates in a different language. In the US, it's the thing that opens a lock, and in France, it's the word who. And we don't argue with French speakers saying, what do you mean who? Ki means ki. We just work with the differences. We adapt accordingly. We translate. That's the secret of appreciating one's time in foreign places or with people from foreign places and ideally getting to know them better and even getting to be friends. As Dr. Fiona Sweland Price puts it, she's an educator and trainer in cultural diversity management, most intercultural challenges stem from ethnocentrism. which is assuming that your own cultural standards apply universally. When you assume that everyone should just know the rules, you also tend to assume that people who break those rules do so in full knowledge of how rude or inappropriate or odd they are being. So, she says, if you want to keep ethnocentrism from turning into full-blown prejudice, here are some things it helps to do. Be aware of your own cultural rules and that these are not universal. This is especially true for members of dominant majority cultures. Learn how to identify and explain languages and language assumptions, concepts, etc., which are unlikely to be familiar to people who have grown up in a different culture than you. And understand that most cross-cultural friction stems from clashes in cultural rules and expectations, not ill intent or poor character. Okay, if you've been in business with people of many cultures, if you've traveled, even just knocking around Silicon Valley, you probably have some awareness of all of this matter, all these matters of cross-cultural communication. But it was an incident in a church that made me think about how these principles apply much more broadly. I had a young female colleague who reported that one time after preaching, she was gently criticized by a woman in the congregation, probably old enough to be her grandmother. She said, "I was taught not to touch our hair in public." Apparently, my young colleague had brushed her hair back as she spoke quite often. I think it's incredibly rude now, my parents. Well, she was exasperated. I only heard her side of it, of course. But it made me stop a moment and imagine the feelings on both sides. The hurt, certainly on the part of my friend, the annoyance, possibly disgust, that made this woman actually speak up to the minister afterwards. The judgment on both sides. You know, how can she make such a big, I've just been preaching and she's making a big deal of I touched my hair from here and from the pew. How can she be doing that? It's gross and distracting. And I thought, what if this were a meeting of two cultures? What if my colleague had gone to another country and in preparing for that, had learned that in that country, it was considered rude to touch one's hair. She was a sensitive person, and I'm sure she would have refrained from doing so as much as possible, possibly with some amusement. Why do they care about whether you touch their hair? But she wouldn't have asked for justification. She wouldn't have just plowed ahead and done it anyway. And likewise, for the person in the congregation, I think if she'd been prepared and been told, oh, this is something people do in that culture, it's not considered rude there, then she would have tried to just accept, okay, people are different. Not better or worse, this kind of habit, just different. And I thought in that moment, what if we approach the differences that we encounter all the time as cultural differences? Cultural diversity management. That's Dr. Price's field. Isn't that what we have here? Now, Theda has already tackled perhaps the hardest one facing us right now, the gap between people of different political convictions. But we encounter these sorts of gaps daily. Maybe we could deal with those using the principles of cross-cultural communication and break down those barriers a little bit, meet across the gulf. Here's one I seem to witness a lot. Millennials think that baby boomers are hidebound and unwilling to adapt. I know, boomers grew up thinking they were being rebellious. Hate to tell you this, the 30-somethings don't think that. The boomers, on the other hand, tend to think that the latter, the millennials, are irresponsible and entitled. Meanwhile, Gen Xers just try to lay low and stay out of the line of fire. Maybe that's how we got our reputation for being disengaged and apathetic. Now, what if we approached this generational difference as a cultural one? and try to understand how it looks from each culture's point of view. Boomers might say, with good justification, that they have adapted to countless waves of new technology in their lifetime, so it's not an unwillingness to adapt that makes today's phones difficult for them. To millennials, they might say that pressing for better conditions at work, that others have put up with the conditions for a long, long time, and they come in and say, no, we need longer vacations, we need parental leave, and that's not about entitlement, they might say. We care about addressing the world's injustices. And taking our full vacation time isn't being irresponsible, it's the opposite. We're trying to take care of ourselves and our families. Imagine if they met like that, just hearing how it looks from the other side. Oh, that's why they do that. Age is a real cultural barrier sometimes, and I think we don't think about it that way because here we all are, growing up in the same city sometimes and not understanding each other. But as L.P. Hartley said, the past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. We know this when we read old books, for example, and it stands to reason that even when you're in the same place, speaking the same language, from the same ethnic background, of the same social class, the same race, somebody raised in the 1940s and 50s grew up in a different country than somebody raised in the 70s and 80s, who grew up in a different country than those being raised here in the 20-teens. What if we treated each other with the same respectful curiosity as we would hope we would treat someone from another spot on the map? Class differences are a cultural difference. They're not only, maybe primarily, about money. They're about what we say with our clothes and our hairstyle, our makeup, our car, where we belong in a social hierarchy and in a social location. So how about, instead of assuming or judging what somebody is saying with those things, we ask them, you got a new haircut, tell me about it. Really good thing to say when you're thinking, that is a trashy haircut. Or that is a really, really snobby haircut. You know we think these things. If you're feeling critical of somebody, the car somebody's just bought, ask them, what does having this, you know, type X car say for you? You gotta say it like that. A real question, really wanting to know the answer. Racial differences are cultural differences. Before you judge white middle-class people for not spanking their children, oh, those children are going to be so spoiled. Or before you judge black middle-class people for spanking their children, oh, those parents are so abusive. Try asking them why and really listen. You will hear some fascinating things. Really listen. That is one of the two most crucial learnings of cross-cultural communication. To listen, not in order to argue or judge or evaluate, but simply to learn and understand. That I might know your mind. Let me listen. Now, I want to say here that there is a place for judgment. There are moral differences. And I guess I would say I'm a cultural relativist, but not a moral one. There are moral differences between the different things that we say and do. And sometimes we need to say, I don't agree with that. I don't approve of that. It's not what I would do myself. It's not what I want to tolerate in my community even. But even so, understanding does not get in the way of that. I mean, looking at people who are actually asked and empowered, required to make judgments, moral judgments. Think of a jury. A jury can seek to understand exactly what someone did and what their reasons were, and end by saying, this was wrong, this was unacceptable, or this was all right. We can give that our approval. We do not surrender our power to judge just because we understand better what someone is saying or why they do what they do. Judgment can come later if it's truly necessary, but understanding, that's always timely. So listening is one of the most crucial learnings, and the other one is be curious. It helps me to think of curiosity as the opposite of judgment. And it's one thing to say, don't judge. Don't judge, stop being judgmental. But you know, for most of us, simply stopping is effective, this thing that we do want to do. Like you're trying to quit a habit, like biting your nails. So it's much better to concentrate on keeping your hands in a certain place, like on your lap or where you can see them. When your hands move toward your mouth, instead of thinking, don't bite, bite his back, right? You think, calm hands, look at them. You can try it. So instead of don't judge, can we try? Let's get curious. And we feel ourselves judging. Oh, here's a difference. I wonder what's going on with this person. I'm curious. A writer I encountered on the internet named Mary Ann Johnson had a lovely parable that I thought told us a lot about this process. Parable of yarn. She calls it Four Ways to Untangle Your Differences. And she's a knitter. And so she confesses that she discovered 100 pounds of tangled yarn in her stash and faced a decision. Was she just going to toss it all out, or was she going to do the extremely onerous, time-consuming task of untangling all the yarns and making them into nice neat balls that could be used? She decided on the latter. She undertook to untangle her yarn, all 100 pounds of it. And she said, here's four things I did that helped. One, know in advance of beginning that it is worth the effort to untangle. There were moments of extreme frustration, she says, when I wished I hadn't begun the project, when I wanted to quit. However, I just kept visualizing the reward of hanging in. The many beautiful scarves, hats, blankets, and booties that would warm the hearts and souls of so many. So you have this tangle of relationships across these difficult gaps. It helps to know in advance, oh, I actually will get something at the end of this. Maybe not rapprochement, maybe just deeper understanding. And it's worth the effort that I'm putting in to understand somebody who's so different from me. Second, she says, with yarn, you have to use a gentle touch. No jerking, pulling, grasping, or tugging on the threads. That just tightens the knots. Guess what? Beginning a political conversation with only somebody who is stupid would believe does not actually help soften the knots. She says, the softer the touch, the more easily it comes untangled. Now, she translates this into the difficulty of untangling human issues by, she says, realizing that you have to have a genuine interest in the other person's position. That's all. Just an interest. Just that curiosity. I don't need to want to convince you. That probably seems impossible. I don't want to be converted. That might be impossible. I don't want to become a member of your culture. I don't need to assimilate you. We're just trying to express this interest. That's a gentle touch. Third, she says, if you can find the beginning of the thread, you have a far better chance of getting the knots out. You can pull and tug and battle all you want, but until you find the ends, you will struggle. Finding two ends allows you to unravel the mess eventually. Wow, imagine knowing where somebody started from, where they're going with the things that they do. Johnson says it's akin to having a belief that the other person's position is as valid as yours, And from that position of mutual respect, you can begin to untangle the mess. But again, validity doesn't mean, oh, I agree with them now, or I even see that our two views are compatible. You just say, oh, I can see where you're coming from. I can see how it makes sense to you. How maybe our goals are not so different, or as Theda said, our values may be just the same, and we just have a different tangle in between the beginning and the end. You may still not agree, Johnson says, but you will see their position differently. And finally, she says, with yarn, allow time. And that, of course, is even more true with human beings. You are not going to untangle 100 pounds of tangled yarn in an hour or two. And you're not going to bridge the gap between you and somebody of a very different culture just in a moment. These principles apply very well to understanding people from different countries. To know in advance that it's worth the effort, to use a gentle touch, to find the beginning of the thread, find where they're coming from, and to give it time. And then it also applies to these other kinds of cultures, the ones divided by age, generation, race and class, religion, politics. Now, what if we apply these principles to each conversation with each person? After all, each of us is much like a culture. We each have a unique and largely invisible history. We have assumptions, habits, ways of being, ways of speaking that shape how we move through the world. Each of us has a language that overlaps a bit with some people's, a lot with others, but has unique connotations and associations that all we can do is try to share with others, again, through that flawed process of language. Thinking of us, ourselves, each as a culture, casts some light on disagreements with friends and partners, with coworkers, with members of our small groups here at church, even when these people who are from pretty much the same cultural niche we are, same nationality, age, race, class, etc., we're meeting across cultures. So what if we approach them like a problem in cross-cultural communication? Let's just listen and get curious. Or to use another yarn analogy, imagine that we are walking through a deep, dark woods of some kind, an unknown place, an unknown time. We're walking through confusion. Oh, wait, we don't have to imagine that. We are. And we come upon yarn tied around the trunk of a tree and wrapped around other trees and meandering through the bushes and up the hillside. What if we just get curious about where it is leading? What if we just try to find out? What might we find? I think that when we apply genuine listening and genuine curiosity to our meetings with one another, what we find may be understanding of other people, the experience of being better understood by others, and just possibly, at the end of all our tangled travels, we might find the world we've been looking for.